Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love.
Parade of SEIU, the radical left, communist, some say gay union, which has been picketing Bank of America and raising all kinds of hell. It's interesting that this is going on all across the country, and who's paying for this, who's organizing this. We think it's Soros and these radical leftists, the Alinskyites, and who, you know, are they on the payroll? The people who are out on in front of the Bank of America and in front of the Wisconsin Capitol and other places around the country. And there may be more to come. Anyway, question, a public policy question. This is going to be a new feature. We're going to be focusing a lot on this since this is a field that I did work in. You know, if you walked off your job and vacated yourself and your employer couldn't contact you and you didn't tell them when you were coming back or why you left, would you get your paycheck? Would your health insurance premiums be paid by your employer? If you are running an office, would your people who are your subordinates, would they be getting paid? Well, can this yardstick of behavior be applied to these legislators who are being called truants? Now, the public policy question is, should they forfeit their paychecks? Will health care be suspended? Their pensions payments be suspended? It is the amounts paid by their employer, the state, the people of Wisconsin. And should their staffs get paid? I don't hear anything about their staffs walking off, but they're not doing anything because their bosses individually are across the state line in Illinois, we think. It's pretty cold there, too, and who's paying for their truancy across the state line? So let's just hope this doesn't spread. You know, they have a right to oppose whatever their governor and the majority members of their legislature propose. That's what they're paid to do, to stand up for what they said they were going to do when they were elected. But to split town to be a truant is not excusable. So let's move on with interesting days today, March 2nd. among the important birthdays that are relevant to our time, DeWitt Clinton, the governor of New York, was born today, and he was responsible for, I think, building the Erie Canal, which was one of the first major waterways to facilitate commerce in the early part of the United States. Also today, it's a double holiday for Texans. Sam Houston was born today. He didn't vacate. He wasn't a truant. He didn't run from battle. We also have Carl Schurz. He was a German immigrant, a legal immigrant to the United States. He was a journalist, very famous in Illinois. In fact, there's a high school named after him in Chicago. And he fought in the American Civil War. And he was a great human being and a great person who did, excuse me, I still have this bloody cold, who was stood up for what he believed in, and of course he fought in the Union Army in the Civil War against secession. And then the controversial Pope was born today. He was also elected Pope Pius XII, Eugenio Pacelli. Now, a lot of people don't know that a lot of the popes, especially the Italian crowd, and we haven't had a non-Italian before John Paul II. The last one was Adrian, who was the Breakspear. He's the one, he was an Englishman, and he's the one who said, gave Ireland to the British, it was England at the time, and it wasn't his to give, and it's caused a lot of problems down through the century for a Catholic country. And of course, England was Catholic at the time of Adrian Breakspear, who became the last non-Italian Pope before, and then John Paul II in 1979, I think. But Pacelli was a papal nuncio to Nazi Germany. He saw Hitler. He saw what was going on. There's a play by Rolf Hochhardt who claims that Pius XII, when he was Pope, he became Pope just before World War II broke out in 1939. And Hochhardt thinks that he covered up and ignored the plight of the Jews and the other people. Yet, we have the Vatican, which is a separate, it's both a religious and a temporal territory. And the Vatican provided, the Pope looked the other way, provided shelter for refugees from Nazi Germany, from Mussolini's Italy. One of the Monsignors there, an Irishman, is a famous movie called The Red and the Black, starring Gregory Peck, who supported, who helped American and British and other Allied POWs who were escaping from the POW camps, and they fled to Vatican City. And he got them out of Italy. And he was a boxer, too. At the end of his life, the guy, the German army officer, the Nazi, who was responsible for the Ardentine Caves massacre of about 700 Italians, men, women, I think, and children. He was tried by the Italians after the war and sentenced to life in prison. He became a Roman Catholic. The only visitor he ever had was this Monsignor, Irish Monsignor. And this Nazi's officer's wife, get this, smuggled him out of prison in a suitcase. Well, he must have been a small guy. I don't think he's living today, but Pope Pius XII, his attitude and the attitude of Roman Catholic prelates and bishops and clergy has been down through the ages, no matter where they were. Their first loyalty and objective was to preserve the rights of the Catholic Church as they saw it. And this got into politics. The Jesuits are notorious for getting involved in politics. We see Georgetown University, which supplies a lot of our people involved in politics, foreign affairs, law, and philosophy. And the Jesuits, wherever they've been, when they get too involved in local countries' politics, they get kicked out and get banned. But they are the second most powerful element in the Catholic Church. In fact, the head of the Jesuit order is known as the Black Pope, not because he wears a black robe. There hasn't been a pope who was of the Jesuit order. This pope here is a Benedictine. He also was a young soldier in the Wehrmacht, and we can't blame him for that. We don't know what we would have done had we been teenagers in Nazi Germany or fascist Italy, or even the Soviet Union for that matter. Let's see, who else was born today? Oh, yeah. Now, this is a German-Jewish refugee who wrote The Fall of the City of Mahagoni. And out of that Broadway show came this song, Mack the Knife. And Louis Armstrong popularized it. And also, those of you who like the TV series, the early one during the 50s, I Love Lucy, Desi Arnaz, a legal Cuban refugee, an immigrant. He was born today, and he had a son who was part of a rock band with Dean Martin's son and somebody else, Dino, Desi, and somebody else. I forgot the other kid's name. Also, the great actress, she supposedly had an affair with Howard Hughes, Jennifer Jones. She did some fine westerns, I think, with Gregory Peck. She was born today. Gorbachev was born today. Now, some people say he's German, according to some of the intelligence sources that I have talked to, that he was actually born in Germany, as was Putin. And Gorbachev's wife, Raisa, had cancer, and she was in Germany, and they flew her back. The plane didn't crash because Russian aeroplane planes have a habit of falling out of the sky. They flew her back to Russia to die. And the famous author who wrote Bonfire of the Vanities, Tom Wolfe, used to wear white suits. He was born today. Hopalong Cassidy was born today. Famous black bass singer in opera, Simon Estes, was born today. And then in rock, Lou Reed, he was born today. And those who like the book Garp, John Irving was born today. Among the interesting deaths were David Lawrence, the author of Lady Chatterley's Lover, which became a notorious film and book and was banned, and then the great paterfamilias of the Redgrave family, Sir Michael Redgrave, he died today. Vanessa Redgrave is his daughter. Lynn Redgrave was his daughter. And Corin. Corin's his son, starred, had a bit part in A Man for All Seasons, the film about Sir Thomas or St. Thomas More. In fact, I had an old girlfriend who went to school with Lynn Redgrave in England. And Lynn recently died, and Vanessa has gotten into some very radical left-wing politics. I don't know what Corin's doing. Among the interesting events today, and this is probably dear to our friend Drew Raines, and remember, his show is also on this network, and it's daily. I can't do a daily show. It's too much. And he needs support for his program and all the things that he's doing and the research that he does. It's a hell of a lot. The Arkansas Territory was organized today. The Republic of Texas declared its independence from Mexico. And this is an interesting history. Some of my ancestors come from that part of the country. My mother's of that in New Mexico. And the Santa Ana and the Mexicans invited Americans to come into Texas to settle. But the deal was that they had to become Catholic, learn Spanish, and swear allegiance to Mexico. And so they got all these freebooters and these, riffraff and political flotsam who came there, and wasn't supposed to be a slave state. And that caused some of the problems. And, of course, Santa Ana was a dictator, was known as Napoleon of the West. And so David Crockett, I think, was a friend of his. Or Jim Bowie, one of the two. And the most recent Alamo film that came out is fairly accurate. The original one with John Wayne and Lawrence Harvey, who is actually a Lithuanian, who's Jewish background, from South Africa, get that one, starred in that. And that was a 60s film, one of those big spectaculars with a great soundtrack by, I think, Dmitri Tiomkin. But anyway, it's a double holiday with Sam Houston's birth, and the Republic of Texas was declared its independence as a republic, and that it was independent from Mexico. And I think it lasted for about 10 years and then it joined the United States. Unfortunately, today, the Department of Education was set up, and this is one that should be abolished. Its functions can be handled by one of the other departments of the federal government. And then a president who tried to restore honesty and competence and rid corruption of the federal government, Rutherford B. Hayes. He was from the Ohio presidents, him and Garfield, among them. Grant was actually from Ohio also. And Rutherford B. Hayes, during his administration, the Hatch Act was legislative, and that forbid government employees from engaging in partisan politics. He had a wife named Lemonade Lucy. She banned alcohol from the White House. So I guess the guys, if they wanted a little nip, they had to go outside the White House and drink in the bushes. And then we had shelling in the Dardanelles, the Gallipoli battle, started today. British ships started shelling the Dardanelles, and we've done interviews with the last British-American survivor of Gallipoli, Colonel Hodges. He served in the British Army in the Grenadier Guards, and he was evacuated because he was sick, and he survived. After the war, there was a depression in England, and he emigrated to the United States and became an American. We'll play that interview again. And he was also at the Battle of the Somme, which is one of the worst battles where huge casualties were sustained by the British Army. A horrible World War I trench warfare. And then, let's see, what else was born today? We had the show trials of Stalin, where he decimated the Red Army's officer corps, and when Hitler attacked in 1940 in Operation Barbarossa, they didn't have any generals and officers to command and to direct the Russian army because Stalin was so paranoid, got rid of everybody. So that's, and then in 1945, this is important, and this will come up in our Friday show where we salute Winston Churchill, who gave his most important speech after World War II. The 8th Air Force, and there's a great movie called Command Decision, and 12 O'Clock High with Gregory Peck about the 8th Air Force exploits in Europe in World War II. And the 8th Air Force bombed Dresden, and there was a firebomb situation created and destroyed a lot of the rich art from Dresden. Dresden was the site of the first orchestra in the 15th century that was formed in Dresden, Germany, Eastern Germany, and also a certain type of pottery comes from Dresden, and they had one of the finest museums, but they're still rebuilding it. I'm going to play that interview, part two, of Hugh Marsh, who I interviewed when I was in Perth, Australia, and we were discussing animals and the environment and pet food and kangaroos, and here's part two of that interview.
Hello, my friends. This is Peter Paul, and I'm talking to Hugh Marsh, who's a farmer's son, formerly a farmer's son, who is now a freelance journalist. Welcome to the program, Hugh.
Thank you, Peter.
Hugh, down here in Western Australia, what is your perspective on the animal problem, the kangaroo problem? Is it strictly a problem of kangaroos, or are there other factors that are influencing the situation and we, the public, doesn't see these things? Can you give us your perspective?
Well, Peter, I think everything changes as the media sees it and as country folks see it. It just depends on where the stress is placed. It's, I think originally the problem with animals in general, when we talk about roos, kangaroos, I think what we're talking about really is the same problem that other countries would have with possibly deer and rabbits. The prospect of farmers looking at them as vermin, and the way that farmers look at them over here at present is that in such times of drought they are taking away the food of the grazing animal that farmer is trying to live on, really. And the competition can get really fierce out in the very, very dry country, which there's a lot of. Now, Western Australia is producing a lot of wheat, and a lot of these wheat farmers they are wheat and sheep farmers, and out in these large cropping areas, kangaroos aren't really a problem. But when you get out to the pastoral areas, and when you go further up north, then kangaroos do become a bit of a problem. As the rain goes through, the kangaroos will, through the natural instincts, be able to sniff it out a lot faster than any grazing animal.
Maybe we ought to use them as weather people.
a day will go there and they'll sniff it out and they'll get in there and wipe that out before any other livestock animal will get there.
Hugh, how long has this drought been going on, or is it over?
Well, we've seen the end of a drought, a 5-year drought, last year. And, unfortunately, some areas of Western Australia are still under drought. Some of that drought conditions, you know, the weather patterns around the world are changing, so everybody's in the same situation, really.
Well, is drought more of a problem in Australia than, say, the Midwest of the United States?
I would imagine so. A drought is possibly one of Australia's worst
natural phenomenon.
Right. Back to the kangaroos. If you wanted a proper perspective on them, you'd have to go out and go and see them for yourself in the natural environment, and
you wouldn't see any in Sydney.
Not unless they're on leashes, you know. Farmer sons have been brought up with the knowledge that they are vermin, and that Dad sometimes goes out and pops a few off when they're over in a certain corner of the paddock and they're congregating around there, just to keep the numbers down, or possibly under the premise of keeping the numbers down.
So farmers see kangaroos as pests that are interfering with their crops?
Yes, exactly. Interfering with their livelihood. Now, things are tough enough without, you know, this animal creeping in. I think where the difficulty comes in is the fact that it's not an introduced animal, that it's a native of Australia.
It would be a first.
Exactly. But that doesn't always take priority, does it?
No.
The kangaroo, really, I think what needs to be done is for people to get the right perspective on how important the kangaroo is. I mean, it's the symbol of Australia, the kangaroo.
Not on Aquinas' tail.
But it's sitting, you know, well, it really is on the tail now. I mean, it's been persecuted. It's had a lot of rough treatment. And this, I think, could be rectified. I think there's very limited cases of people really acting very cruel to kangaroos. Most farmers, when they do go out on a kangaroo shoot, they like to think that they are very good marksmen. And I don't know if you're a hunter yourself, but when you go out with other hunters, you like to be able to show your expertise with a gun.
And proficiency.
Right. And, you know, people usually try and do it quick and clean. But the problem with doing it quick and clean with a kangaroo is that you've got the head is a small part of his body.
That's the part you have to get?
Well, that is the part of the body that your professional roo shooter will go for, because he's an expert marksman and he can pop them off on the head, and that's the quickest, cleanest, most humane way of killing the kangaroo.
What about shooting it through the chest?
Well, that's actually the second place that the marksman will go for. But they don't, as far as I know, they don't really like going for the chest because it makes it pretty messy, because they are, you know, the roo shooting for the carpet. Okay, so pet food.
Okay, since we're along this line of pet food, is that really a good source of protein for animals?
I think it is. I believe it won't be long till people will be introducing it into some restaurants. Now, if it's...
What does it taste like, or have you tasted it?
I haven't tasted it myself. I've spoken to somebody who has tasted it, and they put it along the same lines as venison, when it's done the right way.
What's the right way?
Well, that sounds good.
I mean, would you barbecue it, or broil it, or boil it,
well,
or saute it?
You'd have kangaroo steak. and kangaroo stew. I do believe that it's just another psychological factor. You know, I think that room is just butchered the right way. It's just as valuable as cattle or sheep carcass.
Or horses to your friends.
I mean, that's a matter of, you can see that, you can see the similarities there, can't you?
We don't eat it in the States. I've never tasted it, to my knowledge. I don't know. I'm over here. I'm wondering what's in those meat pies. Hugh, earlier you alluded to the fact, to the phrase, introduced animal. What's that?
Well, an introduced animal would be the rabbit. The rabbit is still in plague, of course, here in Australia. And perhaps not enough emphasis is being placed on the rabbit, I think, with all the I could say the kangaroo, that the rabbit has probably been forgotten about. New Zealand, you know, the deer and foxes have been introduced here. They're also a vermin in Australia. And most young farmers will preferably go out and see the fox than they would a kangaroo. They're more support. They have a more direct influence in the farming situation. They kill young lambs. That is a horrible amount of damage to the lamb. And the pregnant ewes will just eat out the lamb. It's often some horrible things.
What about these feral cats I hear about? It's not as friendly as crits.
I'll hear about that too. Feral cats are a large problem here as well. They're evolving into a large cat. I've seen some very big cats out in the bush, and they are diminishing our bird population at an alarming rate. And a lot of our conservationists and environmentalists are very worried about the feral cat problem. At the moment, I don't know what's being done about it. I know that most park rangers and wildlife people are feeding cats, but there's really not much that you can do with the way the attitudes of most people and most farming folks who cats in the house. I mean, I know very many farming situations where they don't bother to get their cat music exposed, and that's, you know, they'll let them have 6 or 7 kittens, and they'll always have lots of cats around the house. And obviously, one or two are going to start running off and breeding somewhere else. Or the wild ones from out in the bush will come in and get to the house cats.
There are two-legged wild cows too.
We'll have the third part of this interview Friday, and when we have the salute to Winston Churchill, where he gave, this is the anniversary of the most important speech. And so we'll end with our usual, and we'll see you Friday, 5 o'clock.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you 5. Tony, up to you.
Okay, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year. Big ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the clown?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush, nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even...
Well, we'll be back Friday. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Thank you for listening. This will stay up. You can download it on your iPod and listen at your leisure at your computer. Good night.